Hello, Marquette basketball fans. Welcome to another edition of the Golden Break. I'm your host, Adam Woke. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at the Golden Break. Shout out to the production team, Dr. Michael Keegan, Matthew Robert Micus, and Jeffrey Gibellina Esquire. This show does not go without them. I usually like wait until there's like a two-game period and I do a pod, but god damn it if I am just way too excited to not do a pod just covering that UConn game. That was so enjoyable. And, you know, I don't know if there's actually any Marquette fans out there that like Hurley as a coach. I personally don't like him at all. And so for those of you that might be a fan of his, I'm sorry, but beating him is just even better. In his post-game interview, I found it extremely interesting. That actually and him at halftime, but we'll start in the post-game. I'm going to be all over the place. I'm just too excited. Like, I tried to organize the show and then I would break off into 10,000 other thoughts. And so whatever ends up coming out comes out. I've got 1,000 notes. I couldn't organize them and I was just too excited to wait to do the show. So we're going to be all over the place. We're going to deal with that. So at the presser, he like starts the thing off. He goes, 20 points off turnovers, 24 fast break points. He goes, I hope these numbers aren't right. I hope they're embellished. No, bro, they were right. They were very right. And to see the look on his face at how lost he was in trying to explain what happened to his team, I think, one, brought me joy because I don't like Hurley, but also I think speaks to this team and what they do to razz another team's psyche. The way that they play, and you know, we use the word havoc a lot, right? Because of what Shaka did at VCU. And that havoc type defense at VCU is very, very different than actually what we see today. And I've heard Shaka talk before that he's had to change the way that he conceptualizes it because of the way that they call the game today. And what I see in this Havoc defense now that I think is different than the Havoc defense of old is the way that he aggressively attacks passing lanes rather than always people. But also, too, just the way, especially with the doubles in the post. You know, he said in his presser about Sonogo that he said Sonogo got spooked. He got unnerved. And almost kind of played it off as if, you know, this was just Sonogo having a bad game. This was Marquette basketball. I've said this in the past, and I know there have been bigs who've eaten against Oso and have done reasonably well against this team, but I've never felt like we were bad at defending the block because I've always felt that our help defense is really good and we do a nice job on recovery. We did such a good job of disrupting Sonogo in this game by what our guards did. The way that they frantically crashed around him just mentally messed with him in that game. We're talking about, I don't know, what is Sonogo? Top 5 player, what they say? Top 10 player in the country? Our ability to manage that big the way that we did really impressed me, especially in thinking about what is up and coming, right? We're going to have other bigs like this, like we're going to be the undersized team in a lot of these situations. And to know that we have a way to negate that strength or to negate our own weakness, I should say, a way to cover it, makes me so excited about where this team can go. You know, more about Hurley, and I thought this was interesting, especially in contrast to how Shaka was thinking about things. At half, you know, Hurley was talking about how they've got no one to guard. Was that Big Klingon? Is that his name? I don't know if I said it right. I don't follow UConn basketball. But that they're like, yeah, we got to just get him more opportunity. And he's literally said, he's like, they don't have anyone to defend him. Like, said that in the halftime interview. And Shaka, they didn't have Shaka on, but they, one of the reporters talked about, he's like, I talked to Shaka. And he said, you know, we really need to do a better job with our spacing, our patience, and to not be surprised that they actually put Ben Gold out there to really stretch the floor with some of these bigs to continue to try to pull them out. And this is where I think we see a really good contrast between Hurley and Shaka, but maybe also Shaka and many coaches that I think sometimes struggle to adjust on the fly. It was very apparent that Hurley wanted to do everything in his power to get the ball into the block and into the bigs. And while it naturally makes sense to say, okay, let's take advantage of this, we were turning them over in the block constantly. That was what was different, I think, about the turnovers that we created in this game was that, you know, a lot of times I feel like we're good at jumping perimeter passes and skip passes or even trapping guys at the timeline and turning them over. But in this game, a lot of it came from creating chaos down in the block for the bigs. And this is where I think this is important. You could see Hurley continue to try to jam that offensive scheme down our throat, and it just simply wasn't working. I mean, listen, even in the first half, like, they were only up, what, I think, 4 at half, and I don't even think we played, like, our best basketball at all. And so that philosophy wasn't really, like, blowing the doors off of us at the time. But even as the game progressed and began to the second half, this is where I think the difference is. So Ben Gold did come in that second half, and you could see that Shaka did want to try and spread the court. And in the second half, it didn't work. Like, he didn't keep Ben Gold out there for very long because it just wasn't a good matchup for him and where he's at. You know, one day I think, you know, as Gold puts on weight and I think gets used to this style of play with some of these bigs, you know, there'll be time for him later on. But you know, Shaka pulled him pretty quickly. And that's, I think, the difference. Shaka has the ability to abandon an idea if it's not working. He's not going to try to jam it down your throat. Woj. Right? I mean, that was some like the frustrating stuff with Woj, but I think something frustrating for a lot of fan bases in different spots. You know, I can be, as a Bears fan with Nagy, this was something that was like really upsetting, are these coaches who say, here is what I want to do, and we are going to do this, regardless of who your guys are, regardless of what's going on in the game. And that's what makes Shaka so special. His ability to say at halftime to the reporter, here's what we're going to do, and to jump ship out of that really quick. And to say, hey, we're not going to do that. And that's where I think we need to move into our next topic, which is Oso. Holy shit. This was my favorite game by him. I'm going to say it's his best game from my perspective because of the energy he had to put. I mean, he played so much in that second half because Ben Gold just wasn't playable at the time. And he put in an incredible performance on all sides of the ball. To go back to Hurley again, not to spend any more time, this will be the last time I say anything about it, but when they asked him about Oso, he goes, he is a modern-day big who's going to have a long career in the NBA. Ooh, how about that? I don't like you, Hurley, but I like that. And I don't disagree at all. His ability to see the court, I didn't compare him to Jokic, but I said a lot like the way Jokic operates in the Denver system, his ability to pass and see the court the way he does. We deploy Oso similarly. And so Hurley's not wrong. Like, I actually think that Oso's going to have a really good career in the NBA. I'm not saying he's going to be the next great center, but I think there is absolutely a role for him there. But his ability to fight in the block against those giants, I mean, you can't say enough about it. Watching him fight to front dudes, I mean, I was staring at him. I went back and I watched the game twice just to kind of watch what Oso was doing. And he, I mean, he's got guys, I would imagine, I don't know, I didn't look at the height and weight comparison, but some of those guys got to have 20, 30, 40 pounds on him. And it didn't stop him. It didn't stop him at all from being able to get where he needs to. And offensively, you know, at the time, and this is actually a good transition into another topic because here I am jumping all over the place. You know, at the time I was getting, and I've gotten frustrated with Oso in the past when I feel like he's settling for a baby hook that's a little bit further out than I would like. There are times where I feel like there's a big in his way and offensively he kind of just like shorts a shot and puts it up early. But, you know, the more I started to think about it and the more I started to dive into it And especially as the game went along, and even listening to some little cues that I think the announcers were giving from interviews or conversations they've had with players and stuff like that, this team made a concerted effort to attack, we'll say, the mid-range. I don't want to call it a complete mid-range, but because they weren't like taking, I think, a lot of mid-range jumpers, but they were stopping at the hoop prior to getting like even like 5, 6, 7 feet out, rather than, you know, we usually see them get that real high percentage at the hoop look. You know, Oso was actually following a game plan and did pretty well. I mean, we did pretty reasonably from the mid-range, the shot that, you know, you're not supposed to take. And again, right, so if you look at this season and you look at the shot charts, you'll see, for the most part, a pretty extreme, you know, basically everything at the hoop and everything at the arc, right? We've talked a little bit about this, get the most efficient shot on the court. We talked with Nevada about that. But what I think is interesting is we were willing to go outside of what maybe we thought the analytics were going to say and say, listen, if they're going to defend the hoop well and they're going to come out and grab our guards, then maybe we really need to think about more of the mid-range game, especially after the first half when we had 10 blocks against us. You saw an adjustment offensively in the second half where we were settling for those shots that were just a little bit further up. And what happened? It brought the bigs away from the hoop, and then you start seeing things like that nasty Oso alley-oop. I think I watched that like 7 times, 8 times. I don't know. I kind of lost count because it was just so beautiful. But those are the things, right? Read and react, right? You read the moment and you react to it. And I tweeted earlier this week about what Nevada said in his interview with us last year, where he talks specifically about mid-range jumpers and mid-range jumpers saying, he's like, listen, analytics guys are going to like that, but sometimes that's actually the best shot. And that tells you his willingness, this team's willingness, this coaching staff's willingness to assess the situation and take what's being given to you. And I don't think that's normal for a lot of coaching staffs. This staff, impressed is an understatement. I am drinking the Kool-Aid on this coaching staff because of what I've seen them do game after game after game when it comes to adjusting to what's out there and not making it about, I've got to do it my way. I've got to do it this way. I have to do it the way that I want. They look at their personnel. They look at the game situation, and they make strong adjustments. That is going to serve this team so well, especially in tournament play when you get out of your conference. You know, in conference, you get a good idea of who these guys are. I mean, you know what Creighton's about. You know what Providence is about, right? You have an idea going into it, right? But when you get to March, your opponent is going to be obviously far more random, and you're going to see things that you would not have normally prepared for. That doesn't scare me with the Marquette team because I believe that there is not a bad matchup for them. I believe that because I have seen them be able to adjust their game against any style. There's a reason why this team is ranked so high in their offense. Their ability to do that is uncanny. Last year, and even when I talked to Tyler about this, I asked him the question. I was like, hey, it looks like your offensive system has changed. You know, it looks like you guys are playing more five out. And he's like, no, that's not the case at all, actually. He's like, we're running the exact same stuff. And then we started to get into the Justin and Darren Marcel conversation where the ball would get stuck in their hands, you know, and there were times where the offense didn't flow like it normally would. And to know that this offense is now clicking the way that it should be, to see that now we're not reliant on a single player. Like, at any night, any of these dudes can go off. Like, we've seen it. We could go through the box scores, and there's the Omax night. There's the Kolek night. There's the Oso night. There's the Cam night. Hell, there's the Stevie night, right? Or even Joplin, man, which we'll get to Joplin. I got to give him some props today. I'm going to have to give him some props today. I know I'm hard on you sometimes, Jop, but you know, it's only because we want to see you be the best player. So we'll come back to that. But like, all of these guys have had a game. Like, I don't look at this team and say, our offense is run through this person. Whereas, shit, I said I was going to talk about Hurley again, but here I am. I'm doing it again. He also said in his post game, he's like, yeah, you know, we didn't really get into a flow of offense. I felt like, you know, we were running a lot of set plays. Yo, dude, that's you calling that. you call that? Like, you choose that? That was your decision? Like, that's your team. And you're right. Like, set plays, one, are easy to scout. And two, you know, stop your team from being able to, one, I think, play with tempo, to play with pace, and to play with rhythm. And that very much happened to UConn. I want to talk about some things I saw in the first half of this game in comparison to the second half of this game. And this is going to go, I actually kind of want to start this with Joplin. I did say I wanted to circle back to that topic. You know, that big run that UConn went on in the first half was really the time where Joplin and Gold were in the game. And Joplin did not have a good first half defensively. There was at least 3-4 possessions in a row where it was, he didn't close out on a shooter. You know, he got beat off the dribble. He just lost his man. You know, between that and Ben Gold kind of just being taken advantage of, it was hard for this team to really stave off. And the switching. You know, we got caught in a couple of mismatches, and I went back and actually tried to, like, dissect and look at some of the mismatches that we got into, because there was a few times they were able to just to kind of throw it up to the big and you know, let him eat. In fact, there was one where Tyler got caught on some big, I don't know, whoever the hell it was, and they literally just, like, they were throwing up, like, just big lobs where no one could get them, or just throwing them up these big. And the announcer's like, great pass. Like, dude, great pass. What are you talking about? That guy's a giant. Anybody could have thrown it to him. He's got a tiny guy on him. He's huge. Like, that's not a great pass. It's the easiest pass to make when you have a giant in there. But also the right pass to make, right? And the smart pass to make. There were several times where we would get caught up going under when we shouldn't have. We were having a hard time getting through some of those screens, and some of that is anticipation. I think that's something that we've struggled a little bit with this year in general, and also I think UConn is a good screening team. But anticipating those screens is going to really help us in these situations, because when we play teams that have bigs like this, we're not as switchable, right? This was a game where we had to do everything in our power to not switch. There's other matchups out there for us where we can switch pretty easily and feel, you know, reasonably confident at these guys being able to guard who they need to. But in teams specifically like this, and we'll probably also see against a team like Xavier, getting through those screens are going to be really important. There was a play where Stevie Mitchell got caught on Sanogo in the first half under the hoop. And, you know, and looking at that, you could tell either they didn't communicate that screen to him because he almost looked surprised by it. And then he tried to go over and start chasing the guard, but Oso had to come over, and he had to move back onto Sanogo. And, you know, after that, that's just, you know, not a lot you're going to be able to do like that unless he can get Oso. You know, we just couldn't get the ball in a place where Oso could even maybe just switch with him at that point. But I don't know if that's a communication error. I'm not, you know, this team has got sometimes some heady stuff that they do on defense that, you know, maybe they just miss an assignment. And I was seeing a little bit of that in the first half. You know, but we were able to, you know, really, and Shaka called him this, was the first half MVP with Sean Jones. Sean Jones really, I think, buoyed this offense in the first half. You know, at halftime, I think I said Shaka said he wanted to play with more space and more patience. I you know, in retrospect, when I had heard Shaka said that, I was like, you know, that's actually a really good point. I do feel like we were a little bit frenetic on offense in the first half. I didn't really, you know, there's a difference in this team. You could tell when they're all moving and cutting correctly, but we weren't spaced right. You could tell there were some plays that we just got slow and we were in the mud on. And that, I thought, at least in the first half, I felt like we were starting to right that a little bit with Sean Jones in the game. I felt like he brought some of that patience. Seeing just his ability at his young age to get to the rack and not take a shot. Like, that says more to me about who he's going to be as a player than anything else. Is like, when you get there and you don't take the shot and recognize that it's a bad one and to be able to move back out, that's great. Because even him getting the ball to the hoop and moving the ball back out to the arc, you know, maybe not kicking it to an open guy, but, you know, maybe resetting the offense there, you're at the very least making the defense move, right? They're going to move towards you, towards the hoop, and as you move that ball back out, you're going to move the defense again. So at the very least, I think it's always wonderful when you can get to keep the defense moving. It's when the defense isn't moving that you're giving them the advantage. And so his ability to make that flow, and I wrote it in my notes in giant letters, and Shaka said it at the end of his presser, was that play where Sean Jones leaped to snag the ball from the big in the block. I mean, I just, my jaw dropped. And it dropped not because I didn't think he could make that jump. It wasn't about the athleticism. It was about the fearlessness. And that's what our guards bring to this defense when it comes to trying to defend any big. Even in some of those switches, what I loved about it, like that one I talked about with Stevie, I was watching Stevie, and he was just driving his ass into Sanogo. I mean, he wasn't moving him that much, but he was doing everything in his power to move Sanogo out of the space that he was in. And while it didn't work, like, that's fine. It's that aggressive nature that I think makes these guards so special defensively off the ball. You know, we talked to TK a little bit about some of the on-the-ball problems that we'll get. They'll get there and they'll figure out. But off the ball, these guards' willingness just to get up into somebody, to harass them, the way we harass the bigs in the block, I thought was awesome. And I want to, again, touch and be all over the place. I apologize, but this is just what it's going to be. It actually, I want to talk about, too, with that sort of scheme we do defensively. So I want to jump back to what Nevada Smith said to us last year. He said, I asked him about, you know, we don't really run a traditional post play kind of game. And that was something I was used to with Woj, right? You know, we would just kind of, you know, play with the guy in the block, and it was bad. And he said the reason that they don't do that is because, you know, that type of style puts a team in a position for a lot of turnovers. You know, it allows guards to get in there and steal the ball. That entry pass is a lot harder to make than people think. It looks easy, but it's not. And you're going to have a lot of turnovers on that. So I'm reading tea leaves here, but that is actually what we attack. That's the way we go ahead and attack dudes in the block on defense. And I love that. And that's even better because if you think about this and going back again to stubbornness versus flexibility, stubbornness versus flexibility, I think it's a huge topic. I think it's extremely important to recognize and why this coaching staff is so special is that Hurley saying at halftime that he's like, we got to keep getting the ball in the block. And you could tell in the second half, continue to try to get in the ball in the block. Yeah, bro, no wonder you were shocked that we had 24 points, 20 points off turnovers, 24 fast break points, whatever the hell it was, like, because you didn't adjust. Like, we were literally taking advantage of your stubborn play style by going ahead and jumping those passing lanes and creating so many turnovers. And I think Sanogo had 5 himself, and I felt like the dude was barely on the floor. He was unplayable. Unplayable. And again, I don't care if you're a UConn fan, you're listening to this, you're probably not listening to this anyway, but you're going to sit here and tell me, oh, he had a bad game. No, we made him have a bad game. And I will 100% stick to that. A couple of other things I saw. The inbounds at half for Sean Jones, the shot he made at the buzzer, I see them line up. And we've talked now about sort of late game plays because one of, I don't even want to say it's a knock on Shaka, but conversation that I've seen around concern is sort of end of game plays, right? And so now I really want to try. I've been trying to pay attention to what we're running when there's 5 seconds on the clock, 10 seconds of the clock, even if it's at the half, because, you know, that's going to tell you what we're working on in practice. And we ran that same Sean Jones play again, where you just get the ball to him, let him run it up the court. and see if you get a shot off. And it absolutely worked. And I was kind of like, I wasn't mad that he made it. I was like, I wanted to see a new wrinkle. I want to see something added. And then what did we see at the end of the game? And this is not what I was mad about, is we lined the guys up like wide receivers down the baseline. And I was like, oh, yes, here we go. New wrinkle. I can't wait to see what this place looks like. I was going to rewind it. I was going to break it down. And unfortunately, there was a foul. Like, I don't know who got fouled. I forgot. I think it was Oso right as he kind of came out there. And so you didn't really get to see the play develop. But that got me, at least I think, excited about what those are going to look like. The willingness to continue to add to that space of their game and how they're going to manage those end of game moments. Again, not to necessarily always call set plays. You're not going to get set plays from this team, and that's fine. That's not what we want. That's not what this system's built. But you do have to call plays on those inbounds, and you have to think about how you're going to get into your stuff or how you're going to get a great shot off when you have the limited time on the clock. So I was encouraged, at the very least, to see what we were trying to add to our playbook there. Another thing, whatever this coaching staff gives this team at halftime, like, I want a bottle of it, because we come out in the second half and sometimes just look like a different team. Like, this is multiple games in a row now. Nova, Georgetown, UConn, right? There's been several games now where I feel like in the second half there's a switch that's flipped. And, you know, I asked Tyler about it, and, you know, he gave the, you know, we all got to play harder and connected. And there's truth to that. Like, there's energy stuff, and I get that. I understand that. That's absolutely a part of some of this. But I also would love to see, I would love just to be in the huddle with the coaches before they walk into the locker room. Like, what are the things that you want, that you're seeing, the things that you're emphasizing? I would love, especially game to game. You know, we talked here today a little bit about what I thought, maybe just reading some of the tea leaves of what happened at the halftime of the UConn game. But that is a very crucial time for this team where we really see a lot of growth that happens, because that is growth, right? What you adjust and change, and those players' ability to do that is special. And I'm using the word special a lot today because that's currently how I feel about this team. This team is truly special. Now, I said I got to give some props, right? Listen, I dogged Jop earlier in the pod, right, about the first half. But, man, defensively in the second half, if I'm the coaches, I'm making Jop watch that over and over and over again. He was getting up in dudes. He had his head on a swivel. He had some deflections. In fact, I think he really was the X factor in that second half of the game for us, because we really needed more defensive presence in that game. Our offense is going to offense, right? And for this game, I actually took notes a little bit differently. I used to last year just write down all of the offensive plays and kind of dissect what we were attacking, what we were doing. But at this point, like, I feel like the way this offense is, that's not really worth tracking. I wanted to track the defense because I wanted to see where that was happening, like what we were doing or what we were missing, because that was the area that I feel like so far this year we've needed the most improvement. And in that second half, I think what he was able to bring to help buoy the defense and not allow UConn to get back in this game was so important, because he was doing what he needed to on the offensive end. I think he had either the first, second, or third best plus minus on this team for this game. And it's because, for me, again, he could have the best plus minus every night if he didn't give up so many points on the defensive end. Like, there's no doubt about that whatsoever. And so what he did in the second half of that game, like, I'm going to be honest, there's been points where I, in this season, where I just didn't think he had that in him. Like, I just think, you know, there are sometimes guys are guys. Players are players, are going to be who they are. And it doesn't make them a bad. I don't think any of these guys are bad kids. They all seem like really great kids. But, you know, for Jop, I thought maybe, like, you know, maybe this is just this defensive mindset. It just might not be there for him. And, you know, that was stupid on my part, because I think you forget, listen, we all do. We forget the age of these guys. We forget how development is not linear. and everyone is going to grow at a different pace. And each of these guys are going to learn a different way. And I forgot that lesson. And I think some of the assessments that I've made of Joplin and what I saw from him in the second half, I think changed the way I need to look at him moving forward, that is there. And that's a credit to this coaching staff's consistency of allowing him to keep getting out there and giving him the time to let these guys figure it out. That actually brings me to a quote that Shaka had in his presser about Cam Jones. He said, at the beginning of the, when guys were in the layup line, I look over at Cam and you can see he's like dancing and just, having a good time and, throwing the ball. And he goes, I walked over, I said, Cam, like, lock in, man, lock in. And, Shaka said, he was like, I, what I've learned though is like what I realized, even like, you kind of see like he was almost realizing it in the moment. That's what I like about Shaka, is I really do think he like is willing to genuinely say, okay, maybe I was wrong. He's like, listen, I have to even remember something, that these guys are going to be who they're going to be, right? That they're all going to lock in a different way, right? Like, I can't expect guys to lock in the same way that I did, or the same way of like a player I coached over here. These guys are all going to, and finding that's going to be important, right? Because what may have looked to an outside observer who doesn't know any of these dudes, you might have looked at Cam and said, oh man, this kid's not like, he's just goofing around, might not be taking, but like, being free and easy is maybe his way of being locked in, right? And creating a comfortable environment, a calm environment for him. As I tell Cam, it's swag with focus. I love that. I freaking love that so much, because I think that encapsulates what a lot of players need to try to achieve and do. Last thing I want to talk about really quick were the free throws. Huge, huge free throws down the stretch. And also, it's crazy how these things line up, right? Like, you never know what is intentional, what is fate, or what just happens to be circumstance, right? But, in Shaka's presser, he said, this week in particular, we work on this thing called pressure free throws, where at any time they'll just send a guy to the line and try to put them under as much pressure as possible to hit them. And this week it was Oso getting the line. You talk about good timing, right? I don't know if they were projecting that Oso was going to be the guy that was going to end up getting fouled a lot or whatever the hell it was, but hell, man, you talk about really good timing there and doing that. That is huge, because that is what really iced this game. And free throws for us, we haven't gotten to the line a lot, but we finally did here in this UConn game. And I know there's been some games where it's felt like, especially the Providence game, I can't wait to get another look at Providence. I cannot wait. I hope this team is pissed off from that game, because I just thought that was just a bad situation. I mean, you're not going to win a game in double overtime when you lose Omax and TK in the second OT. And the number was off the charts in the 20s, I think, of the foul disparages between the two teams. And we've been in a couple of those situations, but there was calls I didn't like tonight, but I felt like they went pretty much both ways. Like, we still were able to get there, but the fact that we're executing those, I think, is just wonderful. It's going to be huge for us down the stretch. Listen, sorry for being all over the place on this one, but I'm just so excited. You have to be excited about this team. I truly think this is a special team. This might be one of my favorite teams to watch, especially for what they do on the offensive side of the ball. I never wanted to be a program that said, oh, we got 2 5-star dudes who are going to carry us through. That, I think, is a dangerous way to play the game and build a program. There are a few coaches that have that type of gravitas that could dominate most recruiting, and I think it leaves out some of the important things you need to do fundamentally to be a great program. And I would rather be a great program with a great system, where you can recruit guys to fit roles that work within what you're trying to achieve. And we are so very much that. To know that at any point, anyone can be our scorer, to know that at any point, our offense can be carried by any of these dudes, I am beyond thrilled. Like, I know we're going to lose some games coming, but like, I could see us running the table. I really can't. I think this team is that good. We're going to lose a game here, though. Don't get me wrong, but I truly think that this team is truly one of the best teams in the country. And you know what? It's about goddamn time that we got back to this place, because when you have the greatest college fans in basketball, the greatest fans in college basketball, we deserve a great team like this. And I'm really proud to call myself a Marquette alum after a great win like that was last night. I don't know. We'll be back. We'll be back soon. We got some interview stuff coming up. We got some people coming on. I think we got to get more perspectives on this team, because listen, right, who really wants to hear from me that often? But thank you so much for listening, and have a fantastic weekend.